If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Does it ever feel like you're a marketing professional just
speaking into the void?
But with LinkedIn ads, you can know you're reaching the right decision makers. A network of 130 million of them, in fact. You can even target buyers by job title, industry, company, seniority, skills, and did I say job title? See how you can avoid the void and reach the right buyers with LinkedIn ads. Spend $250 on your first campaign and get a free $250 credit for the next one. Get started at linkedin.com/campaign. Terms and conditions apply.
Outdoor Edge knows that providing a freezer full of meat is part of the reason we all hunt. And what better way to bring it full circle than to process your own wild game? Outdoor Edge provides a full lineup of traditional and replaceable blade hunting knives and complete wild game processing kits to bring your wild game from the field to the freezer. Visit OutdoorEdge.com and at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30 for 30% off. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I am your host, Dan Johnson, and I'm going to be honest with you. This is an exciting episode because I am a rookie, and what I mean by that is I am at the very, very beginning. I haven't even shot one arrow out of a saddle yet, all right? And so this episode, I'm going to be talking with Parker McDonald. He is the host of the Southern Ground podcast here on the Sportsman's Empire Network. And he's going to talk to us about his experience basically moving away from tree stands and getting into saddle. He is a saddle, like a full-blown expert level saddle hunter. And he's going to talk to me a little bit about what I can expect, the learning curve, how his first couple hunts were using a saddle. So this is like a saddle hunting 101 podcast between two guys that one is good at it and one doesn't know anything about it. And so this is a real good episode. I'm really excited for it. I'm really excited to get in and start messing around with this thing. I know in the past I kind of talk shit, honestly, on the whole saddle thing, but I could see the benefits of using one, most importantly, like the weight reduction, the profile reduction, and so I have some things to learn before. I guess I'm that kind of guy who really wants to try everything out before he officially, you know, gives a statement on it. And so we talk about the pros and cons. We talk about some of my concerns about, you know, offhand shots and things like that. And so I guess they would say, call that a weak side shot. Parker references that as a weak side shot. So that's what we're going to talk about today in today's episode. And I think the best thing to do is kind of just get right into it. I will say this, that I will be using a tethered saddle this year, and we've kind of gotten into a partnership with them, and so they sent me a saddle. I'm going to use a tethered saddle, and there's a ton of other saddles out there, but I know the guys at Tethered real well. Parker, Mark, Andy, and Garrett, those are four guys that I know who I trust their opinions, and when they're telling me, hey man, you need to give it a try, I think I'm going to go give it a try. So we'll see how this year turns out. But if you're looking for a saddle, if you want to get into the game, I think there's no better place to look right now than Tethered. And not just from their popular brand standpoint, they make a good product, and I'm looking at some of their products right now, very well put together. Very well packaged. You know, like I said, I haven't really gotten into using it a lot, but with that said, I think they're a company that also provides a ton of information on how to properly use a saddle, the safe way to do it, the most efficient way to do it, and how to become better and more proficient using that that tool, saddle as a tool, to go out and kill deer with it. So, you know, if you're going to just go to Tethered's website, look at their product line, and also look at the all the information surrounding saddle hunting. And I think that's going to be your best bet. Now, this is kind of cool how these all kind of lay out. So we have the Tethered saddle, and then we also have Hunt Stand. So if you're a mobile guy, these two products kind of go hand in hand with each other. So you're running your saddle, and then you're on Hunt Stand. And Hunt Stand is probably, I shouldn't say probably, it is, number one, it's the most affordable hunting app on the market. It allows you to see some of the most updated satellite imagery, the terrain features, the topo lines, the property owners, the property lines, right? So what this allows you to do is gather information and kind of journal everything you do out in the woods. And by journaling it and using Hunt Stand to reference not only trail camera pictures and waypoints you put on a map, there's so much functionality behind this app. This journaling is just data, right? And more data and more data and more data. And the more data that you have, the more benefit it will provide you in any hunt, right? Like wind direction, weather, everything. So if you want to find out more information about Hunt Stand, go to huntstand.com, and there's a discount code SN20, saves you 20% off. Next is, and I'm going to get these guys on the podcast, but the Annihilator Broadhead guys, they have a really good lineup of broadheads that you guys can use. Go check them out at Annihilator Broadheads. And lastly, like I said, I'll get more information about Annihilator. Those guys are going to come on to the podcast here probably next month or the month after, talk about their product line. And then lastly, we have the Average Conservationist. Now, I know Marcus. He's the owner. He's also the host of the Average Conservationist podcast here on the Sportsman's Empire. What I love about Marcus is he's the kind of guy that not only talks the talk, but walks the walk when it comes to conservation. So much so that when he decided to start the Average Conservationist brand, he said, the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to take 10% off the top, and I'm going to give it to some form of a conservation effort. So that tells me right now that he's serious about what he does. And I love brands that talk the talk and walk the walk. They have an awesome lineup of logo t-shirts, hats. I would strongly suggest going to theaverageconservationist.com, taking a look at all of their product line. And when you purchase, just know that in an indirect way, you are helping some form of conservation effort, right? So you look good and you feel good. And that's a win-win, man. So that's the commercials. Please go support the companies that support this podcast. And lastly, we have, that's it. Go make sure you're following the Nine Finger Chronicles on social media. Sportsmen_empire on social. And we can all become best friends. And let's get into today's episode. 3, 2, 1. All right. On the phone with me today, my Sportsman's Empire brother, Parker McDonald from the Southern Ground podcast. What's up, man?
Oh, dude, just finally a week after turkey season. Like, man, turkeys just, they wear me out. And so it's all done now, and I don't know what to do with myself.
Dude, you went hard.
Sleeping until 8, and like, I went hard this year, dude.
Yeah, you went
my
hard.
My first year being self-employed, and so I can kind of go when I want.
Yeah.
Sort of, as long as it lines up with the wife and everything. You know, she's, I say I don't have a boss anymore, but I still do. She's just a lot prettier than my other bosses that I've had in the past.
Right, and you sleep in the same bed with
but
her.
But yeah, I got to go a lot. Exactly. Most of the time, yes.
Yeah. And I will say this, listening to you talk about your wife, I think that you have the wife that all guys want when it comes to hunting. Like, she's pretty, I think she understands that the hunting is your passion, and I think she lets you get away with a lot.
She does. And you are correct. She is the best. But I think which last time me and you did a podcast together, free podcast, we got off on a tangent about marriage. I think there's like thresholds, you know, that you gotta respect them, and once she sets them, you just gotta respect them. And I've told her, like, for me, hunting is it's kind of a side hustle at this point, you know, because I do the content creation and stuff, and so it does bring in a little bit of money for us. And once she started seeing that, it kind of became a little bit easier to justify some of the trips and stuff that I do. But yeah, she is amazing, and I am continually learning what that threshold means. I don't want people to think that it's just all sunshine and unicorns over here. Like, we have conversations. It does happen.
Right. Well, this is the Hunting Gear Podcast. So I want to talk a little bit today. The main theme is going to be like getting into saddle hunting, because I'm at the very beginning of it right now. I got pressured by...
Oh, you gonna make the jump?
I'm going to make the jump. And I don't think I'm going to make it full, like 100%. But guys like you, guys like Garrett of the DIY Sportsman, Taylor from Urban Bowhunter, Mark Kenyon, and some of the other guys associated with Tethered, they're just like... You guys are crazy. And what I mean by that is like the amount of pressure I have felt from the saddle hunting community to get into a saddle was more than the pressure of drinking alcohol in high school. You know, it's like, hey, come on, man, have a drink, bud. You know, let's go to a party. So it's like on that same level of pressure.
That's funny. We're kind of like drug addicts.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I used to like make fun of saddle hunters, you know, like there's that meme where there's all these people standing around a coffin. And I think you may have been the one who posted it. And the preacher goes, is there any last words? And one guy goes, I'm a saddle hunter. So, I got a kick out of that. But now I'm in the very beginning stages of getting into saddle hunting, right? And so I've been in one maybe two times now. I haven't even shot an arrow out of my bow in a saddle yet. So in the next couple weeks and months, I'll be refining that skill and trying to figure out, figure out the best possible setup for me using a saddle and using that in combination with the other tools that I have, which are my tree stands. So the conversation I want to have today, and I think I'll just start it off by asking you this. Before you moved into a saddle, what kind of hunter were you?
So I had always owned a climber. I was raised in Texas, and so in Texas the hunting scenario is just so much different. You hunt from blinds pretty much always. Blinds with a feeder out 75 yards in front of you. That was pretty much the way that you hunt in West Texas. There's not this idea of you hunt over corn, well, you're not a real hunter, or you hunt over deer blind, you're not a real hunter. That doesn't exist in West Texas, because the only way that people hunt is from a deer blind with a feeder 75 yards out in front.
Right.
So that was how I was raised hunting. When I moved to the deep South, I moved to Alabama. I bought a climber, and that was how I hunted out of a, I've had a Summit Viper. I had a Hawk Warbird. The Hawk Warbird is the last one. No, that's not true. I had the Hawk Warbird. Then I had a Lone Wolf, sit and climb.
Okay.
And, the sit and climb was without a doubt the least comfortable, but also without a doubt the most lightweight,
yeah,
and the easiest to carry, and probably the most comparable to the weight of a saddle. So that was kind of like my dive into lightweight mobile hunting methods, I guess, was that Lone Wolf sit and climb.
Yeah.
But I probably used that Hawk Warbird more than any of them. I killed a lot of deer out of that Hawk, that Hawk climber. And that was when I first started hunting on public land. And at the time, that was a pretty lightweight, you know, for the money, it was pretty lightweight. And it was also when I started using a kayak. And the reason why I got that one was because it folded down to such a flat profile compared to the Summits. It folded down really flat, and so I liked that. But ultimately, dude, like it was just a pain in the butt to try to carry that, lug that thing around. And I ended up making a lot of decisions on, well, I'm just gonna go a half a mile rather than going in as far as I wanted to go originally. I'm just gonna go in, you know, just a little bit less. And yeah, I made a lot of decisions that way based on, and I'm just freaking tired, I don't want to lug this thing up another hill.
Yeah. So it became more about just the weight of it, and that's part of the reason it led you to a saddle. Did you ever do any, like, sticks and hang-ons, like the Lone Wolf Alphas or Assaults?
So I bought a XOP. I don't even remember what kind it was. I bought the XOP, and I had some Hawk Helium sticks,
yeah,
that I was going to use. This was right before I bought the Lone Wolf sit and climb. And I bought this XOP hang-on stand, went and tried it once. I was like, nah, hate it.
Yeah.
Don't like this at all. And so I ended up selling it and getting that Lone Wolf. So I did give it a shot. I just didn't like it. I didn't like it was just a little much for me. And you got to understand, for me, I'm in the Southeast, and a lot of people love hang-on stands in the Southeast, so call me a wimp if you want to. But that early season, it's freaking hot. And
yeah,
and my hunting style wasn't necessarily different from what it is right now. I was hunting different trees. I was hunting different areas, going to a new spot every day. Like, I was mobile hunting and not like setting anything. And so, you know, that was even while I was using a climber. That's just how I hunted. And the thought of trying to hang up that big giant hang-on stand. I know it's not giant, it's fairly small, but comparable to a saddle, it's pretty big. And I was like, man, I can't, there's no way I'm doing this quietly.
Yeah.
Or easily. I'm still going to be making decisions based on how far a spot is, because I don't want to carry this thing around. And I'm also filming. And so I have to have a way to carry all my filming equipment. And if I got this tree stand on my back, this was before there was, you know, the Lone Wolf custom gear, pocket arm, and all the lightweight camera stuff there are now. But I was carrying a big giant fourth arrow arm with a big base and a bigger camera and batteries. Like, you needed a backpack. You really did need some type of pack to carry all this stuff in.
Yeah.
And if you're carrying a tree stand on your back, it's hard to get a backpack on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So when did you start doing research then on saddle hunting? And was it when Tethered originally came out, or was it before that?
Oh, it's funny. You had a lot to do with it, and you probably don't even know this. So I went on your podcast as a guest. I went on Nine Finger Chronicles as a guest the very first time.
Yep.
Talking about kayak hunting on public land. And I get a message the day that episode drops. I get a message from a guy named Greg Godfrey, who, as many people know, is the owner and one of the founders of Tethered now. This was before Tethered had started. I get this message. It was like, hey, dude, just listen to your podcast. You need to be hunting out of a saddle. And I was like, man, I don't know. I'd heard of saddle hunting, you know, at one point. My story is probably similar to a lot of people's, where they'd heard of it, thought, nah, probably not for them. But he sent me a bunch of videos about, and a bunch, at the time he was doing his G2 Outdoors YouTube channel. So he sent me a bunch of stuff, and my parents were actually in town visiting that day. And I was sitting at the couch just watching all these saddle hunting videos. And I remember looking at my dad and being like, I'm buying a saddle tomorrow. And I did. I ended up purchasing I don't even remember what it was at the time. It was something by, I think it was one of the old original trophy lines.
Okay.
And a guy was selling, and it was a big bulky thing, you know, compared to the saddles these days. I ended up purchasing that, never even hunted out of it because it wasn't hunting season when I bought it. But I did buy it, and I ended up selling it, once Tethered came out.
Yeah. So,
and so
go ahead. Keep going.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, it wasn't too terribly long after that. Me and Greg struck a friendship after that, chatted a lot. You know, we talked a whole lot, and, it wasn't terribly long after that that he called me one day, and he was like, I'm going to do something crazy, and I need your help. Because I had already started Southern Ground. At this point, Southern Ground had started. I had done a podcast with Greg about saddle hunting, and this was kind of before the huge trend of saddle hunting, before Tethered actually came out, and it interested a lot of people. Well, Greg calls me, and he's like, I'm going to do something crazy. Me and some buddies are starting a saddle company like the world has never seen before. We're going to completely base everything around saddles, and I want your help on the podcast. I want your help. I think his exact words were pimping it out.
Yeah.
I need you to pimp it out on the podcast. And I was like, yeah, sounds cool. Let's do it.
Cool.
And that was kind of where it all started for me with Tethered.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the actual, because it sounds to me like you try to hang on you didn't like, that was a short-lived, you know, sticks and steps, and you moved into the saddle. As you started moving into a saddle from a climber, talk to us a little bit about that transition, because I feel like there's a lot of people out there, especially me, who have never hunted out of a saddle. I want to hear what that transition was like, and things that you wish you knew about setting up in a saddle that you didn't know maybe before or during that, like something to help us flatten that learning curve.
All right, Dan, have you ever switched to like a new broadhead, right? You make a switch to a new broadhead. The first deer that you shoot dies in sight.
Yeah.
And leaves like a red carpet blood trail. Your initial thoughts are, I'm never switching again. This is the best broadhead ever made. Have you ever had that happen?
Kind of, yes.
Or something similar.
Something similar,
where the first time you use something, it works tremendously.
Yeah.
That was what happened for me with saddles. So the opening day, my very first time to hunt out of a saddle, opening day here in Alabama, and I killed a deer in Alabama, which for a lot of people may not sound like a big deal. In Alabama, it's a pretty big accomplishment. You know, not a lot of people killing deer on opening day on public land. So I killed a deer the very first day that I hunted out of it. And I was like, well, crap, this works. It's the best thing in the whole wide world. You know, I wouldn't have killed this. I went full Roger Ragland, and I wouldn't have killed this deer if I didn't have a saddle. And it was really cool, man. I mean, I was like jacked up. And so for me, there were definitely learning curves and different things that I had to figure out. But for me, I was like, yeah, I'm doing this.
Okay.
There's not a doubt in my mind I'm going to keep hunting this way. Because I killed a deer my first day using one.
Okay.
So
what was the impact there? All right. So you went there, you killed a deer, you thought it's great. But why? Be more specific of why it was so great. You know, talk about whether that was lightweight or easy to climb, and what was your method of climbing and all that stuff.
There were two big reasons on this specific hunt. So it was an evening hunt on opening day. The first and I had scouted this area. I'll try to explain it the best I can. But imagine a ridge. That you got a long, pretty skinny ridge, right? And it makes a 90 degree turn. And so it almost looks like an elbow of a ridge. And I had scouted this spot before, and there was a thicket on, like, kind of in the pit of the elbow. So in like the inside corner of the elbow, there's a thicket, and there was a bunch of trails coming out with scrapes and rubs and stuff right there in that corner of that 90 degree turn. And there was a ton of oaks, a ton of white oaks that were right there off that elbow point. And, I had scouted it before. It was a lot further back than I would probably go with a climber. And, so there was that part, there was that aspect of it, that it was opening day. And I was like, I'm going to go back there because I can. You know, it basically just feel like I'm walking. I'm not carrying a whole lot. So that was one part of it. The other part was that when the deer came out, whenever I first saw the deer, it was directly behind me. So at like my 6 o'clock. And so my first deer that I ever killed out of a saddle was a turn all the way back behind me. And it was easy. You know, I was expecting the deer to come from in front of me. But they ended up coming from behind me, and I just made that little pivot turn and shot directly behind me. And so I've had opportunities like that in a tree stand, in a climber, and it just doesn't work out that easily. It's just not as fluid for me to do it that way. And even in a hang on stand where you've got, because I did take practice shots and stuff out of the XOP that I bought, you don't have the security, I guess, the tension of the rope to where you can actually lean out. You're still trying to keep your legs from falling off of that platform. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because while you have a safety harness on, usually it's not going to be tight enough to lean out.
Yeah.
And always feel secure. And so there was that aspect of it. That was the two main things for me that were like, that were huge in that hunt that I had decided to go deeper, which you can do with a climber. Strong-willed people, you know, people are getting deep with climbers. So not that it's only possible with the saddle, but for me, it was, that's what that made it possible. And then the other thing is just the shot angle. My first deer that I shot out of a saddle was a, you know, at that point that was a shot that I wouldn't have normally got the opportunity quite as easy. And I was able to make it, count.
Nice. So then, what was your climbing method originally?
It was, I'm trying to remember back then, I was using Hawk Helium sticks, the full size, so the three-step sticks, and I think I was just using three of them. I wasn't using an aider yet. So I had three Hawk Heliums. I was probably, I don't know, 14 feet off the ground or so.
Yeah.
And that was on purpose, too. There were other climbing methods that were available. You had your wild edge steps. You had I can't remember the name of the little strap on pegs that you can put on. There were aiders available that you could kind of DIY. But I didn't want to. I tell people this all the time because they want to get in and they want to start off right off the bat doing the one stick method or doing like some kind of SRT or whatever it's called, where they're rappelling and doing all that crap. They want to take on all this stuff their first year. And I think it's dangerous because it not dangerous in a safety from a safety standpoint, but I don't think it's smart to make the learning curve even bigger than it needs to be. Just simply climb with sticks, figure out what you want to do, learn your system in the saddle, and then the next season maybe move to change something different and start refining what your system looks like.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason why I stuck with the saddle, because there were some frustrating moments because you're dealing with a lot of ropes, you're climbing differently, using the lineman's belt and the tether, and you're learning tether height and you know, spacing of sticks and what tree is the right tree, and you're learning how to climb leaning trees and how to get through branches while you're climbing. Like, there's a lot of things that are just going to happen regardless. Like, make that learning curve pretty easy, and then the next year add something different if you want to.
Yeah.
And so I was just simple, just three sticks.
Yeah.
Going up as high as I could go on those three sticks, and then setting your platform.
Yeah. All right. So you actually had a really positive first time experience with saddle hunting. All right. Your first time out. How much practice did you do before that to get comfortable in that saddle?
Not a lot, actually. I did a little bit. I did some practice. I shot a little bit out of it. But compared to what I probably should have done, I didn't do nearly enough. And part of the reason was, I didn't have my platform yet. So this was right when Tethered first started. And they were just getting stuff out. And if people remember, Tethered kind of blew up unexpectedly. And it was kind of a crap storm whenever they first started, because they didn't really prepare for what was about to happen. They were just, I've done podcasts about this with Greg, but they kind of started it with the idea of maybe one day we can get this business to cover an elk hunt, you know, like, yeah. That was, they started really small and with kind of a small mindset. And then people just flocked to it. It became bigger. And so there was like shipping issues and stuff was on back order and all this stuff. And so I pretty much just been like, hey, I'm gonna, like, no rush in sending me anything. I'm gonna just hunt from the top step of my stick. So for about the first 3 weeks, 4 weeks of the season, I was literally climbing up my sticks and standing on the top step of that stick as a platform.
Yeah.
And that's just how, I mean, I think I killed like five deer just like that, you know, yeah, without a platform. And so I figured, you know, as long as I practice my climbing practice all that stuff, I'll be all right. And I did time myself before the season started. I ended up timing myself climbing, and I think it was like 11 minutes is how long it took me to do a climb from the ground up.
Yeah.
So I got to where I could climb in 11 minutes, and I was like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah.
Let's hunt.
Yeah. And so that initial experience out in the woods kind of solidified everything for you moving, just your style, moving into a saddle 100% of your elevated hunts.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I just, for filming, you know, carrying a ton of filming equipment, my pack probably isn't much lighter than carrying a hang on or something like that, but I'm carrying so much more stuff. You know, I have the ability to carry. I did a hunt this year where I carried a saddle in because I was planning on climbing, ended up not climbing and just sitting on the ground, shot a deer, packed it out, and I packed out the deer in my pack with all my saddle stuff, meat, deer, filming equipment, my bow, everything. I packed it all out in one trip. So, I mean, that's for me, that's reason enough to say, hey, I'm the saddle is it's the real deal.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's talk pros and cons. All right, because I think for anybody who is thinking about a saddle, I have some cons that I've had to try to talk, you know, to work out in my head and talk with other people about. But I want to hear your pros and cons list about hunting out of a saddle. And I know you're experienced in saddle hunting, so your con list may be short, but I still think, like, whether you're new or you're a new hunter or a new hunter or an experienced saddle hunter, those need to be discussed because, you know, maybe saddle, like, just like the guys at Tethered say, you know, saddle hunting may not be for everybody. So I'd like to hear your pros and your pro list and then your con list about saddle.
Okay. I'm going to tell you my number one con list, my number one con item
okay.
on this list is less to do with the actual hunting of a saddle out of a saddle and more to do with kind of joining the crew. Like, there is a lot of really, really good information about saddle hunting out there. If you find the right people, there's some solid information. There's also some really crappy information out there. And so my number one, like the number, when I think of the negatives with saddle hunting, it's the freaking Facebook groups. They suck so bad. I've left. I used to be a big part of them. And when people ask for information, I'd share. There's so much bad information out there about saddle hunting and different climbing methods. And so it's like an intimidation factor when you first start, because there's so many different ways to do it. There's so many different ways to climb. There's 25 different saddle companies producing saddles and like people being sponsored by all these different saddle companies. And it's just, you've been a part of the industry a long time, Dan, you kind of know what I'm talking about. Like there's these bandwagon people out there giving crap information that's going to end up getting somebody killed. There's some guy in his basement building platforms out of PVC pipe. And you're like, what? Oh, yeah. I guess maybe it works for you, but, and then he's selling it and he doesn't have any type of insurance. Like this stuff is real. And anybody who's listening to this that is a saddle hunter knows exactly what I'm talking about. There's just bad information out there. And so that's why I always tell people, get a saddle, get a platform, get some sticks, just learn how to do it and figure out what you want to do differently. Don't get on Facebook or Saddle Hunter Forum and expect to step away from it knowing exactly what you need to do next, because you just won't. It's just bad information most of the time. And so that's my number one thing. Like the people and a lot of the cult following of saddle hunting, I guess you could call it. They just, it's like I don't, I've never seen a guy that uses a Summit decide that he doesn't want to be buddies with a guy that uses an old man climber.
So there's like some
there's
gang.
Not that kind of brand battle.
Yeah. So there's like it. Like
yes, dude.
Gangs. It's, yeah. Yeah. So it sounds
yes,
to me
and
like
it's the most yeah. frustrating thing for me.
Yeah. It sounds to me like what you're trying to get at though is that just be careful where you get your information from, because some of the information out there may kind of steer you down a wrong path. And so make sure that
absolutely.
Like is there any place, you know, obviously you could say, hey, yeah, go anything that Tethered does is great, but is there any place that you would recommend people going and getting their saddle hunting information from?
Guys like Garrett Prawl are, and people have to understand Garrett is a Tethered guy, and he, I'm not sure if he actually works for Tethered. I think he does in some way, but Garrett is not biased in the way that he says things. He's not going to put his name on something that, and I don't know Garrett well. I know him decent, but I don't know him really well. But what I do know about him is he is incredibly honest, and he's going to put stuff to a test. And I think following guys like that is valuable when you're learning something like saddle hunting or I'm trying to think.
He's very detailed in his approach to all of the gear that he uses.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, the guys from the Hunting Public, man. I mean, you see people. There's people like that that you just know, like they're a trustworthy group, and I can tell you that because I know that they're very they have a lot on the line, right? If the Hunting Public guys give false information, they have a lot riding on that false information, and so. They don't do a whole lot of things that are going to be in the realm of shady.
Yeah.
Because they have a lot to lose. If somebody gets hurt from something that they recommend, they've got a lot to lose. And so they're walking the line pretty hard.
Yeah.
Most of the time. And I find people like that. If I'm going to try to figure out something or learn something new or take on a new style of hunting, I find people like that, that I know I can trust, and they do have a lot to lose if they give out bad information. I find people like that, man, and I follow them closely, and I may try some of the things that they do and say, I don't really like that. But, you know, I don't feel like they're going to give me false information.
Right.
Or lead me in a way that is – lead me astray just because they're getting a paycheck from it. I don't see people like that necessarily. There are people like that out there, but I don't consider them to be a part of it. And you know, I don't want to necessarily self-promote right here, but what I can tell you is the way that I try to operate with Southern Ground is just because somebody is a sponsor or something like that does not mean that I'm going to completely disregard a weakness of what they offer.
Yeah.
Just because they're a sponsor. Like, I'm always pretty real in, like, in any flaws or anything like that. You know, if somebody asks me a question, I'm going to give them an honest answer. So if somebody has a question, you know, hit me up on Instagram or Facebook. If it has to do with saddle hunting, if you got a question about it, let me know. I will give you an honest answer that is not in any way dictated by money or free gear.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. Okay. So now I want to talk a little bit about a scenario. It's basically what has prevented me from getting into a saddle earlier. And that would be a, so I'm right hand. So my draw hand is my right hand, right? And my, I hold my bow with my left hand. Okay. So I'm facing the tree, I'm in a saddle, and all of a sudden a deer comes from my, let's just say 4 or 5 o'clock. Okay. And so that means I have to, there's a lot of movement that has to happen in order to get a shot to that direction. So that is a scenario that I find as a con. Like anywhere else, I feel like I could get in position and shoot. So tell me why that maybe that shouldn't be a con, or walk me through that scenario where that 3, 4, 5 o'clock shot placement is not as bad as what I'm making it sound or run in my head that way.
Yeah. So for me, like I said, I'm filming, so it's already difficult to shoot that. I call it the, most saddle hunters call it the weak side. It's a weak side shot. It's the, for most right-handed shooters, it's going to be your right-handed, the right side of you. Something we know about deer hunting is there's always going to be a wind direction, right? And I always try to set up to where the wind is blowing in that direction, right? Like, I don't want, if that's where the deer are going to be coming from, and I know that, then I'm going to set up on the other side. I'm going to try to avoid my wind blowing on all my strong area shots and strong sided shots, and have the predominant wind of that day going back to that, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock area, which significantly reduces your chance of a deer coming from that direction. And if one does, you're probably not even going to know it. If the wind's blowing that way, you're probably not even going to know he was there. So there's the first thing. Always try to set up with your wind going in that direction. And that's not anything different than hunting out of a tree stand. You're always trying to set up with the wind in your favor. And so still continuing to do that with the wind in your favor. Every once in a while, you get the wind, it'll shift, and a deer will come from a direction that you least expect it to. It might come from that direction. And here's the way that I have done that. And I've shot a couple deer in that scenario. There's two different ways you can do it. The first one is to do the pivot where you turn basically all the way around from your left side and turn all the way back around to that, you know, 4 o'clock. And it's just a pivot that you can do. And Tethered has a really good video showing how they do that. For me, the way that I have found to be best is I will set up my platform. The top stick will be equal with my, the top step of my top stick will be level with my platform. Are you tracking me?
I'm tracking you.
Where I'm going there?
Yep.
All right. So you set it up almost, what would it be, like 45 degrees, I guess, from your platform, to where you have your platform in faced directly in front of you, where you're faced directly in front of you, and then that top stick is on the left side of the platform, basically 45 degrees. Does that make sense?
Okay.
All right, and so what I'll do, if a deer comes from my weak side, I will step over to my top step of the stick and use that as an extension of my platform where I can shoot all the way around that tree. So you take a quick step to the left, get on that top step, and you can lean out and shoot what was your original 4 or 5 o'clock. On the other side of that tree. It basically just makes it to where it's in front of you.
Gotcha.
With minimal movement. You don't have to do that big giant pivot turn. If you're using a camera, you can still have your camera perfectly placed to where you can get that shot on film. And that's how I do it. And I don't see a lot of people doing it that way. Usually people are trying to get more height out of their setup. And so they'll set their platform up you know, a big step away from that top step of their stick. And, but for me, I would rather have that extension of my platform for the just in case moments like that. And it's worked out well for me.
Okay. All right. All right. So
it's very hard to verbally say it, to verbally explain what I'm talking about. It would be great if people could see what I'm doing, because I'm actually making hand motions.
Yeah.
While I'm talking about it. But just setting your stick equal with your platform.
Yeah.
Level with your platform. That helps a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a specific scenario, you know, that I'm going to have to learn how to, you know, if a deer, I need to practice that, obviously. And we've talked a little bit about the cons of information and things like that. When it comes to the pros now, let's talk about, I guess, all the benefits. And you don't need to go into a ton of real in-depth detail, but just hit the bullet points, and then I'll pick out maybe a couple bullet points that we can go into.
Well, number one for me always is safety. When you look at saddle hunting with no experience, you think there's no way that's safe. But when you actually do it, you realize it is so much safer than when done correctly. When done correctly, that's a big deal. It's so much safer. Number one, make sure that you're buying products that are third-party tested. Because there's a lot, like I said, in these groups, there's a lot of people selling crap that is not. And my fear is that people are going to get seriously hurt using these methods and using these different things that people are buying just because maybe the price point is cheaper. But safety is number one. You think about it, you're always attached to the tree from the time you leave the ground till you get back on the ground when the hunt's over. You're always attached to the tree with equipment that is thoroughly tested. You're talking about Amsteel and ropes and all kinds of stuff that's just really strong quality stuff.
Okay.
Again, I cannot stress this enough. Make sure you're using stuff that is proven third-party tested. If they're not doing that, don't give them your money, because you could end up paying the ultimate price for that. That's the number one thing for me. I always had the idea, like, you talk to any old timer out there. I think Dan Infault just put out a thing on his Facebook. It was a poll asking how many people had fallen from a tree stand. And there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people. You ask anybody, and they have had equipment malfunctions where they fell and got hurt, or maybe they didn't get hurt. They got lucky. But I just knew, as much as I hunted, at some point I was going to have an equipment malfunction. Something was going to happen. And when you're putting your life in the hands of aluminum, like, or any type of climber or straps or anything like that, you are going to have equipment fail on you. And I've had some close calls. I've never actually fallen, but I've had some close calls when hunting from a tree stand. So that was number one, was safety. Number two, I don't have to get into it too much, but it's the weight savings. You can literally, if you're not filming, let's just say the average guy not filming, not carrying a bunch of filming equipment, you can get into a saddle and find a climb method that's safe and be like less than like sub 10 pounds with everything that you need to take into the woods. Like there's really good methods out there that you can do that are going to be just so lightweight. Things that you can't do with a tree stand. Let's see. The other pro is going to be shot opportunity. Like we've already talked about, I won't get too far into that, but you have lots of shot opportunity that you can take. Let's see. That's really the big ones for me.
That's the thing that I guess I'm looking for. One of the things that I'm looking the most forward to from a pro category is going to be that weight reduction. You know, here in Iowa, and the way I hunt, even on public, I mean, I'm sure if I wanted to, I could go back 40 miles or, you know, like a whole mile. But realistically, there's not a lot of places that I need to go. So that's, in the past, it's like, man, carrying a hang on and carrying four sticks didn't, it really wasn't like, I didn't think about it like that because it's not so heavy. It's not like I'm going in 2 miles on a piece of public or anything like that. I was, you know, I can park my truck and I can walk. I mean, hell, I can walk 500 yards or I can walk maybe a half a mile at the most if I wanted to, if I need to loop around an area because of a specific wind direction, right? Outside of that. So I never.
Well, y'all's year old bucks are all like booners, right? So like you can literally just hang up by the parking lot,
right?
And from my understanding, that's how Iowa works.
Right, you just grunt from the truck and shoot them right out of your right by your truck. Yeah,
exactly. So, you don't have to go that far.
Right. So I've never had to do that before. But as I start going into these other scenarios, for example, Nebraska this year, when I was in Nebraska and I was on the ground, I saw a couple locations that would be awesome to get a tree stand or a saddle in. And so this year, when I go back to Nebraska, I'll be hunting mule deer in the mornings. And then in the afternoons, it's just the way this piece of property kind of sits, then I would hunt whitetails. And there's a couple, you know, big tall trees in some of these draws that would be perfect for a saddle or something like that. And I think that, if I could, and it's a much longer walk to get to them. It's like a mile, maybe even a little over a mile to get back in there. And so I can definitely see that compactability, that weight savings to get into an area like that. So out of everything, I think I'm looking forward to that. And I think I'm starting to understand why people, like I had a short conversation with Andy May a while back about, he's just like, dude, you just got to give it a try because it's going to change everything. And then at the same time, talking with Greg from Tethered and just kind of hearing him just be like, dude, it's just another tool. I think a lot of people think you have to be all saddle or all tree stand. And really you don't, because, you know, obviously I have some rut locations where I already have tree stands hanging in a tree, which just climb up, sit in your tree stand. And that's going to be a good option for you. But from a mobility standpoint, I think the saddle's going to benefit me. And I'm really excited to put this whole process through the ringer and actually see what the outcome's going to be. And from what I hear, you know, like if my experience is anything close to what your experience is like or what Andy's is like, then I'll be able to continue. You know, like I'll just get better at it and, you know, might be using a saddle more and more.
Well, you hit on something there, Dan, that I totally forgot about, and that's the tree selection that you get mm-hmm. with a saddle. You're able to get, which you can do this in hang on stands as well, so it's not just for saddle hunting, but you can literally get into any tree, you know, safely. You can get into any tree if done correctly, and I have found you can get into the cover of the tree and things that you can't do that with a climber. Like where I'm at in Alabama, you got big tall pines. In a lot of places, that's where most people hang their climber at, is in those big tall pines, when the white oak that's really branchy and has all the cover is probably in the better spot. And so tree selection is a big deal. And what I have found, Dan, when you talk about Greg saying the saddle is just a tool, it is just a tool at first, but I have found for me that the benefits outweigh the maybe convenience of having a tree stand. Or like at my dad's property is a good example. He has a bunch of blinds and a tripod stand set up on his property, and many times I will end up just going straight to a tree and climbing it and using my saddle instead of sitting in the blind or the tripod, because my shots are better. I have better shot opportunity. I can maneuver around better. I can film easier just because I'm used to that. So once you get into it and start learning, you find that while, yes, at the beginning, maybe it is just another tool for your tool belt, for me, it's become the main one. It's become the only one that I really feel super comfortable in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not like, I will be working with Tethered this year. Right. And there's that. But I'm the kind of person, like, I'm to the age where I don't give a shit about brand. I give a shit about product. I give a shit about, is it going to help me? Is it going to benefit me while I'm out in the field? So if saddles truly do benefit me, I'm going to continue to use a saddle. If they make my hunting style more efficient and I'm able to get into different spots and get closer and kill specific deer or more deer, then that's a win for me. And that's how I choose my products. And I'm going to give saddle hunting a try, and I'm going to see if it meets that criteria. And if it does, then I'll be using it more, man.
Dan, can I give you one piece of advice?
Yes, sir.
When you're starting saddle hunting, I would, for the first part of your early season, I would go out and shoot as many does as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And learn the shot,
the
taking
feel.
An actual shot on a real life. Yeah. Yeah. Taking the shot on a real live deer before you get into the moment of truth with a giant buck deer in the rut. I would take as many shots on real life does as legally possible. And, for me, that's always helped. I do that every year. Every year I will, for the first part of the season, I will shoot just about any doe that gives me the opportunity up to a point, and it helps. It really does help. It gets you back into the swing of it. You know, like for me, like I've said before, I'm filming. It gives me opportunity to, you know, practice on a real live target before I get into the moment where I have to make it count. And I think that's important. You know, everybody's not the same way. Some states have different regulations and stuff where you can't do that, but I would say if at all possible, shoot as many does as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. You get better at doing something by doing that thing. And so, yeah, I 100% mm-hmm. Agree with that. So, well, Parker, man, I really appreciate you taking time to hop on and chit-chat with us about that transition and saddle hunting and things like that. I'm outside of the podcast, I'm probably going to use you or Garrett as the phone calls, like, hey, I'm having a problem doing this, or like, you're going to be my customer service for Tethered, basically. So, because you guys have the experience, or just saddle hunting in general. So you might get a couple late evening calls while I'm out practicing.
That's fine. Let me know, man. I'll be happy to help. However, and anybody listening to this, like, I try to make myself available, especially via social media and stuff. Like, if you got questions on anything you want an honest answer for, hit me up. I'd be happy to help.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.